Okay, guys, we're gonna start. Okay, so first of all, we'd like to welcome the Dove's dad to Shear. Okay, we always like it when parents come. B, we're going to see if this causes a break in the streak of Nadav meeting his girlfriend for lunch every day. Okay. So it'll be very interesting. Okay. Secondly, I see that a new group has developed. Like, beyond the Hawaiian shirts, Shear Club group, there's now the Zalman Topol group. Okay, I have to admit, I'm kind of partial to the Hawaiian shirt group, but maybe it's because I haven't had a Zalman hot dog yet. So we'll see. See, till after I go there, we'll reserve judgment.
Yeah, I really want Benny.
Why, it's better than the other one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. In any case, I like today's topic for the following reasons. It has a lot of good elements. We're going to discuss different customs about where to fill in on Chol HaMoed. And one of the reasons I like it is, you know, I'm a person who likes to have rationales for things. It's always frustrating if you just say, oh, X has a minute to do it, and Y has a minute not to do it. I'm always curious, okay, but why would one have a minute to do it or not to do it? What really is the halakhic or hashkafic issue at stake? So we're going to try to understand what it's all about, why someone would want to wear, why someone would not want to wear. It's also interesting, because we're going to write the topic, because this is an example of where Kabbalistic ideas might have influenced Psak. There's always a question, do we keep them as two separate realms? Right, there's the world of halakha, and the world of philosophy and mysticism, and each one has its realm, but they shouldn't overlap at all. Or do we sometimes see overlap with my mystical ideas or my philosophical ideas could influence on how I posken? So we're not going to, just to give you a little head start, we'll get there in about 20 minutes. For whatever reason, the Zohar is very against wearing tefillin and chol hamoed. So we'll see that groups that are more influenced by the Zohar, actually we'll just toss it out there right now. If I ask you which groups in Am Yisrael today think would have more Zohar influence than others, who would you pick? Okay, Hasidim for sure. And Sephardim, correct. Okay, Sephardim and Hasidim would be more influenced than Ashkenazim. And therefore, you'll see if you look at your family minhag back home, if you're Sephardi or Hasidic stock, it's very likely your minhag is you do not wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. If you're of just standard Ashkenazic stock, it's not for sure, but then it's more likely that you do wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Just one thing so no one's confused. You might have been a little confused this year, because in Israel, the universal minhag is not to. Did someone warn you this beforehand? Like, if you bring your tefillin to shul on Chol HaMoed in Israel, you get dirty looks. They kick you out of shul. They're very adamant about minhag Eretz Yisrael. But in Chutz Laaretz, you could be in the same shul, and half the shul is wearing tefillin, and half the shul is not wearing tefillin. Okay, everybody good with the introduction? Okay, great. So let's get started. Now, if I'm asking whether you should or should not wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, the starting point would obviously be, well, Chol HaMoed seems to be an extension of other holy days you don't wear tefillin, namely Shabbos and Yom Tov. There, there's no debate. So let's start out by figuring out why you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and then we'll figure out, should we apply that to Chol HaMoed? So let's look at the first source in Erevin. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Yachol Yaniach Adam Tefillin B'Shabbatov Yom Tovim. Maybe you think you would wear tefillin on Shabbos. Tamal Omer V'yalcha L'ot Al Yadecha. Tefillin is described in the Torah as an oath. It's some kind of symbol or sign. Mi shetzrich an oath, yatsu elu shein guf an oath. How is Shabbos described in the Torah, guys? And we even say it in Kiddush? Oti. So Shabbat itself is an oath. So there seems to be an idea that you don't need double otot. Days that don't have oath quality, we need tefillin. So that's why the average Tuesday you have tefillin. Days that already have their own oath quality, you don't need tefillin. So Shabbos and Yom Tov have this oat quality, and therefore they don't need tefillin. Okay, but now things get exciting, guys. Now we start to get to good analysis. So if that's true, guys, what do you think should happen when we go to Chol HaMoed? What's the million-dollar question here? Exactly. What makes Yom Tov an oat? And based on that question, does Chol HaMoed qualify? Okay, so let's just toss out some possibilities, and if you're ready to see how analytically this could be quite interesting. What is the essence of Yom Tov? What makes Yom Tov an oath? So guys, give me some possibilities, and we'll see if Chol HaMoed should qualify. Elisha. Excellent. So what if you start with Isser Malacha? Maybe Elisha is the most logical position. Oh, extra credit if you wear the hat too. Okay, there you go. Okay, then you know why David Hammer's wearing the hat? Because of all the guys there, he's the only one who actually worked behind the counter at Zalman's. Okay. The rest of the guys just eat hot dogs. He actually works there. Okay, so... it's not true. Don't take that seriously. Okay, so Elisha said, so maybe Isser Malacha is the definition. Now here is where things get... life is just interesting and complicated, guys. If I say Isser Malacha is the criteria, should Chol HaMoed make the grade or not?
Yes.
Maybe.
Ah, so Elisha's right. Not so simple. Now most of us don't experience it so much, but there actually is an Isser Malacha on Chol HaMoed. Why don't we experience so much? Because there's certain built-in heterim. And those built-in heterim often kind of downplay the Isser Malacha for us. For anyone know some of the two of the most famous ones? Yeah, Josh Shapiro? Okay, good. That's true. What else?
Like nails.
No, but give me the category. There's one category called Davar HaAved. What's Davar HaAved? Meaning you wouldn't do Malacha on Shabbos, so you don't know, even means losing money. Okay, I'll close my store at 7th of the week. But apparently you don't have to lose money for the purpose of Chol HaMoed. That's why most of your parents go to work on Chol HaMoed, right? Davar HaAved is not a problem. So there is Nisr Malacha, but with a huge leniency called Davar HaAved. Another huge leniency is called Tzarech HaMoed. What do you need to do Malacha for the purpose of, right, the Moed itself, right? You need, let's say you wouldn't normally build a house on Chol HaMoed. What if you need to build it because otherwise people have nowhere to sleep on Yom Tov itself? Right, so that would also be mutter, right? So now, so okay, guys, we've got criteria one on the board, Isser Malacha, and we have a little bit of a doubt how that would play out in Chol HaMoed, which has kind of a partial Isser Malacha. Moshe, the yeshiva skydiver, what do you say?
Well, first of all, actually, David Trench is also now a yeshiva
skydiver. Okay. Okay. By the way, I will do one now and one a little bit later, guys. There's two new questions about the four distractions of Yeshiva Gaiman. All right. Okay, one question is as follows. As you guys know, one of the famous distractions is having a girlfriend. But I realized a week ago that I have a new question. What if you don't have a girlfriend, but you spend endless time talking to every girl in Harova? Like, does that still count? So the nafkamina is David Trencher. Okay. All right, here we go, guys. Okay. What's your question, Moshe? Go ahead.
I was going to suggest another criteria for Chol
HaMoed. Yeah, that's here. Okay, good. So obviously, Isser Malacha might not be the only thing that makes Yom Tov an oat. So what else could make Yom Tov an oat?
The Korban Musaf, or Saying Musaf.
Oh, that's very good. Very clever. So maybe what gives Yom Tov its character is you bring a Korban Musaf. Excellent. Now let's think for a second, guys. If that's the criteria, where would Chol HaMoed fit in? Does it have a Musaf or not a Musaf?
It does.
Excellent. I think it's very interesting here, because lurking here might be like, where do you really find the essence of Yom Tov? So we had Isser Malacha as a possibility. We had Korban Musaf as a possibility. Okay, I did.
But if you say that it's a Musaf, we also say Musaf today in Rosh Chodesh. But you
take up your Tefillin for Musaf.
Okay, so that was a very clever question. You guys are doing a great job today. So Adin is suggesting, but wait, maybe Chol HaMoed, maybe part of our analysis should be how parallel it is to Rosh Chodesh. And I just want to emphasize his point. Okay, we're going to go totally out of order. I really like when you guys anticipate all the Mefarshim. So Evan, go to source 8 for 1 second. There's a Tosin Chagiga, and we'll see Adin's point on the last line. Evan sees this V'Ode Tanan. Okay, I just want to give you a brief reference here, guys, because it's very interesting. You might have been aware of Megillah, which almost says you can rank the holy days in our tradition based on how many people get called up to the Torah. You ever notice there's like this whole scale? So if you ever think about it for a second and stop, you realize we're kind of ranking the days, right? When do you call up 3? A regular Monday, Thursday, that doesn't have so much status. When does 3 jump to 4? Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed. Notice they're the same category. Rosh Chodesh, Chol HaMoed, 3 jumps to 4. When do you call up 5? Yom Tov. Excellent. When do you call up 6? Yom Kippur. And 7? So it's very interesting, Gemara, right? In theory, we're ranking the days based on how many people get called up. But notice what perhaps is most intriguing, which is really another Shir Koli, right? According to that ranking, Shabbos beats Yom Kippur. Now, here's where things get really interesting, guys. If you actually looked up the Gemara Megillah, you'll discover there's another day of Rabbi Yishmael. What does Rabbi Yishmael think? 6 on Shabbos and Seven on Yom Kippur. So it is kind of fascinating if you ever ask yourself, is there some kind of ranking system of holy days in Judaism? And what would happen in the clash between Shabbos and Yom Kippur? Realize that there's a Machlokas and Megillah, which one gets six and which gets seven. One second, guys. But for our purposes, though, I think Fox's point is very good. What got ranked together? Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh. They're both in the four category. So look at the last line, guys. Though Ditznam prepare Gimel de Megillah, Kol Makom She'ein Yom Tov V'yesh Musaf Korin Dalid Kigon Chol HaMoed Ve Rosh Chodesh. We'll come back to this later in Shirayo, but I think the point is made right there. Now wait. If Chol HaMoed is analyzed, maybe it should be viewed as akin to Rosh Chodesh. And if it's akin to Rosh Chodesh, perhaps you'll come to the conclusion that you should put on tefillin, in fact. Okay, so some we've got Musaf and Issa Malacha. Anyone else want to toss out a suggestion? Zach Magerman.
Maybe it's just the item that we actually...
Ah! What about the Mitzvah Hayom? So, for example, why would we not wear tefillin on Pesach, arguably? Any day that... Well, oh, very good. Why is it better? Guys, it's too good to share because there's too many good tangents to do. Okay, why is chametz perhaps a better way to go than matzah? Ah, because matzah, arguably, there is only a mitzvah to eat it on the first night, right? Arguably, there's only a mitzvah on the first night. The rest of Pesach, you want to have matzah, but you want to just eat at no meat and potatoes, that also works, right? Whereas chametz is a good way to go because, obviously, the chametz prohibition is all of Pesach. So what if I say, oh, the Isser Chametz is where Pesach's really at? That's what makes it an oat, and therefore Chol HaMoed would be an oat. What might I have to say on Sukkot? Obviously, the mitzvah of eating on Sukkot. Right, so I could say there also that that's what makes it an oat. So notice already how things have gotten complex here. You had three totally different positions about what makes it an oat, which we would then try to compare to try to see where Chol HaMoed fits in. Okay, Avishai. Oh, that is really interesting, except for one thing. I'm not saying you're inherently wrong. If that would be true, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur might be left out of the mix. You might have this wild theory that I should be putting on tefillin on Yom Kippur. Right?
I mean, but there's the idea that you can't wear leather on Yom Kippur, so...
I'm sorry?
Oh,
no,
you can't wear leather on Yom Kippur.
Okay, have Rosh Hashanah.
Just leather. I don't know, it's just...
By the way, I think it also it might just be leather shoes. I think you could wear your leather jacket on your kippur. I mean, it might look a little funny in shul, but... Okay, so let's go to some sources inside, and we'll see how these possibilities play out. Okay, so let's start with the Rashba. Okay, Rashba, of course, a famous Sephardi Rishon. Shoot, of course, is Shelot V'Tshuvot. So he says, the tefillin... Oh, let me make one more point, guys. Sorry, a little historical point for all the Kabbalists in the room. Okay, when was the Zohar publicized? Which century? Even later, 1200s. Okay, so that means that halachic discussion prior to the publication of the Zohar would obviously happen without the Zohar lurking there. Okay, which means that this whole question about should I wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed was very much part of halachic discourse before anybody was citing... The Zohar. So now things get even more complicated. Wait, we had this discussion that's already on the table. Now the Zohar comes into play. What impact should it have on a discussion that's already out there? Okay, so let's look a look. What does the Rashba say? V'tzlim b'chol shamoid sh'alta madati. You ask me, what about tzlim and chol moid? Ani sover she'ein manichin. I say, don't put on tefillin. She'gam heim oat. Because they're also an oat. What makes them an oat? So he goes with the Lisha Shmala approach. Says the Rashba, why shouldn't you wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed? Because what made Yom Tov an oat? What makes Yom Tov an oat? Issa Malacha. And guess what? He defines Chol HaMoed as having a Issa Malacha. But notice what just happened. Here we have someone thinking you should put on Chol HaMoed, not at all based on Kabbalistic reasons. This is purely within the standard halachic universe, right? Oh, on days of oat, you don't wear tefillin. Guess what? Based on my criteria, Chol HaMoed is a day of oat, and therefore you shouldn't put on tefillin. Okay, great. But now he throws in one more thing. Okay, guys, really, I'm sorry. Now I have to give this year every year because there's too many good tangents here. It's just great. Okay, maybe each year I'll do different tangents. Okay, and look at what he throws in now. Umalacha do right to hi b'moed. What else does he throw in? the Issa Malach of Chol HaMoed is? So if I throw that line in, obviously what's lurking? Someone thinks, maybe, right guys, can you agree? You only say something like that if there was another possibility. Right, he wouldn't say Issa Malach on Shabbos is the right. That's just a given. Right, so already, what's lurking here? Ah, Issa Malach is ancient criteria, but that will only work if it's the right. Now, one last thing, guys, I'll take more comments. Can anyone tell me why someone would suspect that the Issa Malach on Chol HaMoed is the Rabbanan? What, based on something we've said in Shir thus far. Okay, can I tell you why it might be the Rabbanan? Okay, Josh Shapiro. Ah, very good. Josh Shapiro is excellent. Guys, isn't it true that when you have a lot of leniencies, you start to suspect that it's the Rabbanan? Doesn't it tend to go together? Right? If you have something that there's barely any leniencies, okay, the writers are tough. But let's say you say we're makel for A, we're makel for B, we're makel for C. At some point, you start to suspect maybe the original prohibition wasn't so harsh to begin with. So Josh is right. So it sounds like somebody out there was thinking, wait, if we're lenient for Davar Aved, we're lenient for Tzarech Moed, maybe I should just conclude that Issa Malacha is the Rabbanan. So far we have the Rosh for saying, no, Issa Malacha is the Raita, it's the reason it's an oath, and therefore even on Chol HaMoed, no Tefillin. Alicia.
I haven't learned all of Chumash, but where in the Chumash does it say anything about Chol HaMoed,
Malacha, Asr? We're going to get there in a minute. Okay? So let's keep reading, actually. Okay? Umalacha Doraiti B'Moed. Dekulu Tanai Maiti Le Mikra B'Chagiga. Now, I admit it, most of us have not gotten to Chagiga Daf Yud Chet. But if we did, apparently, what is it? Josh, you did all Chagiga? No, you're almost there. Okay. I should have waited a week to get your clothes until you got there.
It's on
Daf Ben Amdala, so. Okay. Adin. I have a suggestion for you, okay? No, stick to two things. Making good comments on cheer and killing wild boar. Okay, stick to your specialties.
Okay. Josh, I'm sorry I embarrassed
you. No, it's okay. By the way, I've been telling everybody back home that I have two guys in yeshiva this year that have both killed a wild boar. No, nobody believes me. Okay. What? Jonah Hoffman, no?
Yes.
Jonah Hoffman also there. Okay. Is Jonah here?
Yeah, Jonah's here.
Jonah, right? Okay, what happens in Chagigat Yud Chet? There's certain drashot where we derive from Sukkim that there's an Issa Malach on Chol HaMoed. Now, granted, at least it's not explicit, but don't forget, things derived from drashot also get the status of Doraita. So if that's a serious drasha, we should then say that Chol HaMoed is, in fact, an Issa Doraita. Okay, everybody good so far? Okay, terrific. Let's now go to the Meiri. The Meiri is going to make Moshe Epstein very happy. Okay, let's see what the Meiri says. Rabbi Yehuda, this is source 6. Rabbi Yehuda allows in the Gemara writing a mezuzah on Chol HaMoed. Now, why would he be allowed to write a mezuzah on Chol HaMoed? Or tefillin? So that's very clever. What's the claim? Well, even if the Gemara is not explicit about this, obviously you could wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Because what do we say? Really, you shouldn't do melach on Chol HaMoed. What is one classic heter? Tzarech Moed. So what would be the best Tzarech Moed? This fellow's tefillin or puzzle. He needs a new pair of tefillin. So if you're allowed to write tefillin on Chol HaMoed, that would show that you put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Shai, you want to knock out the proof? You say it again?
If you are so fair and you need to get someone's
hair done, very good. So Shai cleverly would say, maybe the heter is not Tzarech HaMoed, but Davar Aved. Excellent. So maybe you can knock out the proof. In any case, if we skip down to the third line of Meiri, he says, and this is going to make Moshe Epstein very happy, V'chein sheyesh bem karban yamta v'tzalomar, karban musaf, hari hu oat. Maybe the whole oat was not about malacha to begin with. Maybe karban musaf is really the paradigmatic act that gives yamta its oat quality, in which case, Chol HaMoed would have oat quality. So again, we have the Issa Malacha analysis, and we have the Karban Musaf analysis. Let me just show you 3 and 4. Sorry. Last line of Meiri, guys, just there's a practical psak. So he says, V'chein shamanu al-ktzat rabbeinu tzarfat. What do those French rabbis do? Who are the French rabbis in the Middle Ages? Tosfot. Min ha-muvakim shvachonim, shenoagim lahanicham below bracha. What do they do? This is one of the classic halakha compromises. We're not sure if we should do it or not. Well, put them on, but don't make a bracha. And this is why, one reason this is important, guys, is it reveals something about Birkat HaMitzvot. When you make a bracha, yeah. Oh, thanks so much. Thank you much, Avner. Avner, what anarchist literature are you reading this week? Okay, so, I just realized something. You shouldn't be able to look up anarchist literature in the library, because it should be like everywhere in the library. Right, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, like, I mean, it would be exactly like, you go to the librarian, where's your anarchist section? We don't have an anarchist section. Okay, so, you should say, like, nobody has an anarchist section. Okay, so, in any case, guys, a Birkat HaMitzvah, is that crucial to the mitzvah or not? Let's say I forgot to make a bracha, my yotzei the mitzvah.
Yes.
That's why this is a very easy move, guys. If the bracha would be crucial, this would be a lousy solution. But that's why this is often the solution, because you don't really need bracha for the mitzvah. Bracha is a nice introduction, but you yotzei anyway. That's why it's often true to say, oh, we'll deal with the suffix by performing the act, but not making the bracha. Okay, yes, Josh Milstein.
So just going back to the Meiri and Rabbi Yehuda, can you be denied from the fact that he says Makedesh Tov La'atzmal, that
Yafeh, very good. Shai Merglis, I think he might have you there. La'atzmo does not sound so much like it's part of his business deal. It sounds like he's writing it for himself. Right? Very good thing, Josh. If you're Chris, I'm not going to do it right now. The Meiri has a different way of knocking on the proof, if you read the whole piece. Okay, not Chai's way, but he has a different way to knock up the book. Yes, Nitai.
What's the problem with having three yodot?
What's the problem with?
Why are we so has the problem with having one yodot?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm a Dr. Fair. I'll get to it if we have time. Okay, yeah.
Well, one of the reasons is if the yod is Musaf, we have a problem with Rosh Chodesh. Like, that could be one of the reasons why we want the yod to be Musaf.
Okay. No, but he's asking why, going back to the very premise of the whole shir, why can't you have two otot? So you have Tefillin and Shabbat. What's the big deal? You have Oud and Oud. By the way, we'll point out, Nitai, the Gemara might not be saying it's usher to put on Tefillin and Shabbat. It might be saying that there's no mitzvah to do so. Well, we'll get to another time how Tefillin became Oud. Okay? Yes?
Would everybody agree if you don't press Mila, you should be
putting on? Oh, that's clever. You want to know why Brit Mila? Oh, see, now you're back in your home court. Things are good. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Why you don't have, I'm leaving for side, but that, why does Brit not create the same thing? No, I'm just saying, like, it could be, it's easier to explain, oh, I just need some oat, I don't need two. But it wouldn't be problematic necessarily to have two oats. Where if you say it's us, sir, you have to say a stronger claim that there's something problematic about it. Okay? Just to give you an example, Nitai, look at the Aruch HaShulchan, this third line. I'm not sure we get to it. You see what he says? Shabbat tochel tefillin? And again, this is not the only way to go at all. Look what he says, though. The gnai hu l'shabbat shitzterech l'ot acher. What does he seem to think? What's gnai hu l'shabbat? Guys, someone help out here.
Degradation.
The good word, gnai, is degrading. Right? The claim with some LB, it's almost like you think Shabbat can't handle it by itself. Shabbat needs help. You want to create this oat quality, this oat dynamic. But if you put on tefillin, you're saying, oh, Shabbat, you can't hack it. You need to melt. Now, again, it's hard to explain, but this would seem to indicate that it's actually problematic, right, based on that formulation. If you have got an oat, you're kind of detracting the oat, and you need to bring something else into play.
And then you can say that you're degrading the gemila.
Ah, very good. So now, see, we'll do that too, guys. You got me every angle in here. Okay, there's one thing that we didn't ask yet, which is, if for whatever reason we view the two otot as contradictory, it's not obvious why Shabbos should win. Right? So Nitai is saying, Nitai's a very talented fellow. By the way, if you guys want to go on a tiol, he's your man. He's a walking compass. Okay.
He took us off trail a couple times.
Okay, fine. So he's not a walking compass. Okay. What? But he's got great enthusiasm for the outdoors. So the enthusiasm will win you over. Okay. What? Okay, so back to the Otzot. See, guys, it's the only yeshiva we have to remind the Rebbe to get back to the Torah. Okay, so here we're trying to figure out which oat should win. So anyone make a suggestion why Shabbos beats Milah? We didn't discuss that point yet. Like, if we assume that some of these two Otzot clash, why does Shabbos win? Zach?
I mean, we can use the argument that we used before about how Shabbos is on the highest degree.
You mean like Shabbos versus Yom Kippur? Okay, but you probably want to spell, you're right, spell a little bit more how we know Shabbos is on the highest level. Yeah, Donnie Deutsch?
Because if you violate Shabbos, it's Karis.
Okay, excellent. So it's a very interesting question, guys, how you rank mitzvah. Not so easy to rank. But you might say the best clue we have might be punishments. Are we at this point? That might be the best clue. Like if one prohibition is a death penalty crime, and the other prohibition is like nothing or like a minor fine, I think it's pretty reasonable to say our tradition takes the death penalty crime is more severe than the other. So that's the interesting question. So guys, take a look at two things. Look at the Aruch HaShulchan again. Donnie Deutsch, very good. Okay, see the second line of Aruch HaShulchan? Tidche Shabbat Shechayven Ale Mita Ubeitin L'tfilin She'ein Chayven L'Karit Umitat Beitin. What's the claim? How did our tradition know that Shabbat is more important? Shabbat's a death penalty crime, and this is a good trick question. What punishment do you get for not putting on tefillin?
Nothing.
Nothing. Right? In general, you don't get punishments for lack of fulfillment of the mitzvah aseh. So based just on the punishment scale, Shabbat would outrank Brit Milah. Just to throw in one other thing, Nitai, go back to the Mechilta in source 2. Okay, this is good to know, guys. If you know this, you really make my day. Who knows? Okay, Joshua, you are not eligible for this question. Okay? Who knows what the Mechilta is? Ooh, Adin Fox.
The Midrash on Shmuel.
Great. What kind of Midrash, though?
Tanai.
Well, Midrash Agadah or Midrash Halakha?
Agadah. Halakha.
Yes. Okay, very good. I guess by default, that was pretty good. Okay. Now, since we love Adin, and he's one of the stars of the yeshiva, so I feel comfortable making the next claim. Okay, I said before that there are two new questions about the four distractions. Okay, so one question was my, girlfriend question. Okay, and the other question is there might be a fifth distraction, apparently. Apparently, some people are very distracted by volleyball anime. Okay, now, I didn't know there was... I did not know there was such a thing as volleyball anime. Let alone one could be distracted by it. But apparently there is. Apparently the Japanese really like volleyball. Okay? Wait, just curious. A show of hands. Who before I just said had heard of volleyball anime? Okay. Okay, there you go. There you go. Okay, there, I'll explain very briefly, even though I've never watched a moment of anime in my life.
Okay. 2 years ago,
we were
watching it.
Oh, really? Okay, Avner, do you know what anime is?
Of course.
Okay. Wait, then why is it so complicated? So apparently, many anime shows are set in the context of a volleyball team. Where did you get that from?
I went to Amish Country after I went to Berkeley Park.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
If that's true, that's like a great trivia question. Like, what sport do the Amish and Japanese share in common? That is a great trivia question. Okay, wow.
Well, that's just the Amish.
Okay, we'll have to check that out. Okay. Okay, but in any case, apparently, even some of our finest yeshiva guys are distracted by Japanese anime. But we're not going to put that on the list, though. It still doesn't make the point. Okay, Alicia.
With your whole ranking thing of Shabbos based on the punishments, what in Shabbos is the sign? Is it Kiddush? Because you don't get Misa for not saying Kiddush. So it depends on...
Okay, Shabbos. That's interesting. But Isser Malach, which only your approach before, would certainly work well. Okay, one other thing, guys. Look at the Adin Fox is absolutely right. Mechilta is a Medrash on Shemot. But remember, guys, when we use the word Midrash, we tend to think of Midrash Agadah, right? Midrashim, like Avram and his father's idol shop. Remember, there's a whole other series of works called Midrash Halacha. They are also expanding on the Pesukim, but they're trying to work out the Halachot. And, guys, remember this is always my trick question. The Mechilta is the one on Shemot. The Sifra is the one on Vayikra. The Sifri is the one on Bamidbar and Dvarim. And the one on Bereishit is called? Does not exist, right? Why is there no Medrash Halacha on Bereishit? Okay, I always make the same joke, I'll make it again, right? Because there are no Halachot on Bereishit. If you had a Medrash Halacha on Bereishit, it would be like the volume Jewish Sports Heroes. Okay, that's why we do not have Medrash Halacha on Bereishit. Okay. Yeah, yes, Adin, that is correct.
This is all happening.
Okay, fine. In any case, look at the Mechilta, guys. The Mechilta deals with Nitai's question. Second line of Mechilta. Amarta Tidcha Shabbat Shikuya Od Ubrit Litzfilin She'enin Queen El Od Bovatz. This is also quite fascinating. The Mechilta's got another way to go. What was our first approach to why Shabbat beats out Mila? We know Shabbat is more weighty based on the punishment. What's the second claim? Forget punishments. Look at what terminology is used in the Pesukim. What does the Torah call Shabbat? Not just an oath, it also calls it Briti Bini Benichem. Apparently, if you look at Tefillin, Tefillin's very nice mitzvah, but it's never referred to as a Brit. So the claim would be, oh, Shabbat's got more components. There's more going on in Shabbat, more values being spread than in Tefillin. Therefore, Shabbat beats Tefillin. So again, it's interesting, Itai, because usually when people give this shiur, and myself in the past also, the focus is all on what makes Yom Tov an oath. But you're right, the fundamental question before that is, why did Shabbat and Yom Tovot beat out Tefillin? And then we have some explanation. Nadav.
Couldn't you say that Shabbat beats out anything that's not in the Ten Commandments?
Just, you might be right, just you have like some source for that rule.
No.
Okay, look, I'll say this, Nadav. It's true that in Judaism, Shabbat is way up there. Okay? But again, even things, but it's like I once, I'm trying to think if this is exactly true. Yeah, let's try this. Maybe we'll come to the conclusion that as valuable as some halachas, there's nothing that always wins. Right? You pick something you think it always wins, we'll show you, no, even the most important, it shows you how complex life is, because life is all about balancing values. Let's try this. Let's say someone says, Shabbos always wins, it's so powerful. What's the obvious counterpoint? That's not true, because Pikuach Nefesh overrides Shabbat. And Brit Milah overrides Shabbat for the night. That's a very good example. So now I say, okay, so now I figured out what the most important value in Judaism is. Saving a life always wins. What's the problem with that, of course? It's not true, because there are three cases we are supposed to be a martyr. So life's pretty complicated, right? Maybe there's nothing in halacha that always wins, because there's a lot of important values that you have to balance.
Why can't you say there's three cases anymore?
Okay, well, we'll discuss it some other time. Yeah. No, lolam doesn't just mean every second. Right? It doesn't mean that Shabbat is an ode on Monday afternoon. Okay? We're all good so far? Everybody good? Yeah, Josh. I don't remember if he paskins, but it does sound like he's with a sympathetic with the Tosfos, right? Do it without a bracha. Well, don't get... Okay, a little Jewish geography for a second. There are basically three centers of Torah in the Middle Ages. We're used to the idea that there's Sephardim and Ashkenazim, right? So there's the rabbis of Spain and the rabbis of France and Germany. However, okay, if you ever travel in France, you'll see there's a part of southern France called Provence. And Provence, even though it's part of France today, it was separate culturally from the France of the Middle Ages. And a lot of famous rabbis lived in Provence. Does anyone know, if you know this guy, this would really be amazing. And you know somebody besides the Meiri who lived in Provence? Ooh. Rashi did not live in Provence. He lived in regular France. Anybody besides? Sforno lived in Italy. Ooh. We need a Jewish historian. Who's the Jewish historian? No, I meant which child guy loves Jewish history? No, who loves Jewish history here? What? I'll give you a hint, fine. There's someone who was a famous critic. There's a famous critic who lived in Provence. Yes, the Ravid, very good. Remember when you open the Mishnah Torah, the Ravid is often criticizing Rambam? Okay, the Ravid lived in Provence also. Okay, so just realize, when you think about like different cultural centers in the Middle Ages, I'll give you a great example, guys. This we have discussed in the past. Okay, this again shows you how much Jewish history changes over time. Today we'd say Ashkenazim do philosophy, Sephardim don't do philosophy. If you lived in the 1200s, what would you say?
Quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite. Sephardim do philosophy, Ashkenazim do not. It's true, Rashi and Tosfos were great men. They were really not interested in what Aristotle had to say. There is no Tosfos in Shas that references Aristotle. Okay, they just were not interested. Okay, the Rambam, of course, was quite interested. But now you should realize, wait, where does Provence play into the mix? It's a third entity culturally. So you'd have to ask, what was the Provençal rabbinate like? Were they more like Rambam and his buddies? Or are they more like the Tosfos? So just realize, Provence is a third entity. Okay? Great. Okay, now for those who like mystical things, ready to get a little mystical?
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, before we get mystical, one last thing. Look at Tosfos. What does Tosfos say in the second line of source 5? De'ika ot b'pesach, de'aser b'achilat chametz, u'besukka, de'chaya besukka. One of you suggested before, I don't remember who it was. Okay, very good. So what do we have guys, so far, guys? Three definitions of what an ode is on Yom Tov. Definition one, carbon musaf. If so, chalamoid's in the game, right? Definition two, some of the mitzvahs hayom. Let's say, for sake of argument, chametz and sukkah. If so, once again, chalamoid's in the game. Wait. Definition three, isser malacha. If so, a little debatable, right? Because notice the isser malacha and chalamoid wasn't so powerful. It has all these heterim. And when the Rashba said it's the Raita, that even was a clue that some people seem to think it's the Rabbanan. So if we go with Issa Malacha, we have a bit of a question mark where Chol HaMoed should be categorized. Now let's go to the fourth thing. We'll see who heard all kinds of legends as a kid. We're going to discover what kind of elementary school education you got. Go to the Ur Zeruah, source 7. Okay, now those, what I said till so far was really the three major theories. The three theories that make the most sense. Look at the Ur Zeruah in 7. Shehein Gufanot. Shenahar Sambatyon. Having to do what happens to the Sambatyon River. Umaleb is churo mochichin shenachin bahem. To be Noach, it rests. Who here has ever heard a agadic legend about the Sambatyon River? We'll see now who gets. Well, Avner Kronish, would you hear that?
Tomorrow.
Okay, what Gemara did you learn? Okay. Okay. Josh Olivas, where do you know this from?
Actually, my Hebrew teacher in 11th or 10th grade.
Yeah. Okay, Judah Berman, how about you?
I heard this like audio recording once of like this like kind of like some magical guy who's like trying to do some.
Okay, so what's that here, guys? That yes, Aaron Levitt.
Tribes getting exiled.
Okay, excellent. There is an idea that the 10 tribes still exist, and we can't access them because there's this raging river called the Sambatyon that is in the way. But what's the claim? That on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it rests. The Sambatyon River rests. This is a agadic idea. What? Okay. Oh, Ari Dardarga. I bet in Chabad in Melbourne they discuss this a lot. Okay. You know, Ari, we're going to make you in charge of your call. Every time, like, a wacky Jewish legend comes up, you're in charge. Okay, you're going to be our go-to guy. Okay, so in any case, so this idea, now, in my mind, this is not a historical statement or a Jewish statement. It's a symbolic statement about the tranquility of Shabbos. What happens on Shabbos? This stormy, raging river comes to rest. What if I take it very seriously? So now, skip to the last two lines. Ulaloshon Sheni de Rabbeinu Yakim Yesh Lahatchin. How could I decide if Chol HaMoed's an oat or not? Al Yedei Nahar Sambatyon Umalet Bischuro Im Nachim Be Chol HaMoed Oat Velo Mechai B'Tilin Emeim Nachim Mechai B'Tilin. To me, this is just remarkable. Okay, what's the claim now, guys? What makes an oat?
It's
a modern rest. So now, what will I have to do to paskin the Chol HaMoed question? Send an explorer to the Sambatyon River. If it's raging during Chol HaMoed, you shouldn't be putting on Tov. If it's resting during Chol HaMoed, you don't have to. So I have to admit, guys, I put this on mostly for entertainment value. I think this is kind of a maverick position. I think the other three seem much more reasonable to me. It's a function of Isser Malacha, or the Mitzvos, or Karmen Musaf. It's a little bit hard for me to believe that it's a function of whether the Sambatyon River is raging or calm. Yeah, Simcha.
Yeah, could you argue that maybe like he is in a eccentric way arguing for this far as the law, because they're kind of cut from the same cloth?
Ah. Oh, fascinating. And you're saying when I went there and checked out, if it was calm, that would actually reveal what the ripe sock is regarding... That's very fascinating, sir. Very interesting, sir. Right, correct, correct, right. You want to say the same thing?
He's answering okay. Your issue with halacha. You said halacha is ambiguous. He was like, this is how you would
oh, that's very interesting. That is quite interesting. Yeah, all right.
Or couldn't you argue that it must be that the sambadium is raging on Kol HaMoed based on the legend of the ten tribes? Because otherwise, why wouldn't you be able to come back on Kol HaMoed? Because it would, I would assume it would fit into one of the hetter.
Okay. Okay. Right, that's great. Okay, Aaron Levin, we now have your mission in life. You have to find some tshuva at some point in Jewish history, someone said, right? Is it a violation of Chol HaMoed to cross the Sambatyo and to rescue the 10 tribes? Okay, wow. Where we should put it in your book of tshuva. Okay, yeah. What? Oh, Rabbi Yitzchak from Vienna. Rishon from Vienna. Rabbi Yitzchak from Vienna. Was he a misnaget? There was no such thing as being a misnaget in like the 1100s. Okay, or you can ask me if he was like a rationalist or a mystic, but you can't ask me if he was a misnaget. Yeah.
Maybe to get ultra-mystical, maybe the reason we're not doing malacha on Yontif and Shabbos is because the river is resting.
Okay. Let's see, you want to make it, it's the opposite of the Elisha Simcha. The opposite of Elisha Simcha. Okay, very interesting. All right, guys, turn the page, please. Let us go now to, once already kind of a little bit of a mystical vein here, let us go to the super mystical vein. Okay? Because, again, even though we had the Sambatyam legends, I think that Elisha and Simcha are right. In a sense, it's still in the world of regular halachic discourse. In what sense? We're still asking, is Chol HaMoed an oath? That's still the question, right? Is Chol HaMoed an oath? If it's an oath, it doesn't need filling. If it's not an oath, it should have filling. We're still in the world of halachic discourse. Okay, now let's go to the Zohar. Okay, here we go, guys. Source 9. Okay, and we're going to see something very interesting. I think we'll have time for it. About what impact the Zohar should have on our halachic thought. Rav Hamnuna Saba Amar Hachi Ilun Inan Yomim Ikrim Tovim. Here's Yom Tov. The Inun Tfilin Dereisha. Yom Tov is somehow associated with which Tfilin? The head Tfilin. The Inun Tfilin Dekutcha Brichu Manochlon. Ah, and who puts them on? Hashem. Now, to be fair, there is a Gemara in Brachot about Hashem putting on Tfilin, but it seems to be a bigger theme here in the Kabbalah. Okay, so again, what's Yom Tov associated with? Tfilin Sharosh, but who's Tfilin Sharosh? Hashem is Tfilin Sharosh. Okay? Valdat ikwin tovim begin the inun nehirin bereshit the kutchi la v'cholar tayamim tovim inun tfilin dereshit kushbichu marlon. Fine. What about cholo shomoid on the third line? The low ikri yomtov, it's not a yomtov. Ilin tfilin didroa. Now that took me a long time to get. Can anyone tell me what that word is? Well, just by proselytization, what do you think tfilin didroa are? Oh, that was very good. Josh Levas, that was really excellent. It's the tfilin of the hand. Now, beyond proselytization, guys, there's a great Aramaic rule. Remember that shin sounds in Hebrew tend to become tough sounds in Aramaic? So shalosh becomes tlat, right? And how do you say snow in Aramaic? Talga, right? Because shelig becomes talga. So there's another rule which is much less well known. Zions in Hebrew tend to become dalads in Aramaic. So how do you say gold in Aramaic? Gold is dahava. Right, Zahav becomes Dahav. Okay, so notice what you have here. So now it makes sense. Tefillin didroa is really tefillin dizroa, right? The tefillin of the arm. So I don't know why this is. You have to ask a Kabbalist. Go ask Rabbi Aaron or Rabbi Davidel. But basically, what happens in the Zohar? Yom Tov is associated with God's tefillin shel rosh, and Chol HaMoed is associated with God's tefillin shel yad. Okay, but what is the upshot of this? Two lines from the end. Ubegin kach, for this reason, be'elin yomim de'inan, tefillin demari alma, asur la'ancha shar tefillin. If those are the days of God's tefillin, then they're not the days for human tefillin. Okay, so again, I'm not a Kabbalist. I'm not going to try to explain this. But let's just say, if one's in the Kabbalist universe, somehow it is bad to be putting on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. That is explicit in the Zohar. Okay, well, good so far? Josh Hall, he's getting excited now that we quoted the Zohar. Okay, it's an interesting question, but you go ask your local Kabbalist. Okay. Soon. What? Then ask yourself. Okay. All right, here we go, guys. So, last thing. So now, remember, Guys, there was the debate here. Was the question generated by the existence of the Zohar? Not at all. Remember, till this point in Shir, we've had a whole halachic debate without any connection to mystical ideas, right? You could already debate. How do you define Ode halachically? And does halachically meet the criteria? See, we've had a wonderful debate till now. But now what should happen? We've had this one debate. All of a sudden, the Zohar gets introduced to the conversation. So let's look at two reactions. I think you guys find this very fascinating. Okay, one is by the Radvaz. The Radvaz lived in Egypt in the 14 and 1500s. And one of the things I love, guys, if you're a really good rabbinic writer, there's a good reason why you have to learn Tanakh, even if you're a rabbinic writer. Okay, you notice that all your phrases somehow are alluding to Psukim? Everything when rabbis able to write, I love it. I wish I was able to write like that. Okay, well, somehow there's everything's like another biblical illusion working there. Okay, so look what he does here. Guys, here's your job. Don't go to lunch till you get the two biblical illusions. Okay, here we go, Radvaz. Shalom, Yeshlan Yechtfilin Becholomoy, Shibrin Becholomoy. Kiriti Bezeh, what did I see? Kala'am Puschim Al Shtei Asifim. Anybody?
Eliyahu.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Okay, Eliyahu says, why are they like straddling the fence? Okay, pick a side. So he's using it, how is he using it in this context? Everyone is straddling the fence, they can't figure out what to do about Tefillin on Becholomoy. People are struggling. Okay, next. Now look at the third line. This is even more interesting. Umiktsatam yireim latzman. Some are nervous. Why are they nervous? Lefi shenimtza katuv besifrei hakabbalah shaminiach tum chalamoid ne'enash. Because what they read in Kabbalistic books? So isn't that true that Kabbalistic warnings get people really nervous? So already here it is, right? The Rabbah saying people are afraid to put them on. Vanaknu lo neda manaseh. Well, that is biblical reference number two. I think it's from Tehillim, right? When we don't know what to do? Okay. So now let's go to the last line. The Radvaz is feeling very conflicted here in Egypt. What does he say? The kiven she plukta divrei hakabbalah yachrichu v'atal taniach. Ah, just fascinating. Kiven she plukta, since already there is a debate, divrei hakabbalah yachrichu. The words of Kabbalah can decide the issue. So what emerges here according to Radvaz? If Kabbalistic sources would conflict with our entire halachic tradition, apparently what would the psak be? Follow halachic tradition. But if already there's a machloket, why shouldn't Kabbalah come in and guide the machloket? So he really thinks in this case we should let Kabbalah decide. Notice we already had this raging debate before Kabbalah entered the fray. Should we wear Tzvon HaMayin or should we not? Since Kabbalah is so adamantly opposed, so he posits that we should not. 1 second, someone. Okay. However, the Marshal gives Marshal. Now, notice the Radvaz is Sephardic and the Marshal is Ashkenazic. It's not an accident here. Comes to the Marshal and says, "I don't like the idea of bringing Kabbalah altogether." Look at the fifth line of Marshal. He says, "Imaya Rashbi," because again, traditionally Rishon BeChai is associated with the authorship of the Zohar. "Omed lefanenu." Let's say Rashbi would come back to life and stand before us. V'tzavach l'shanot ha-minhag sh'nagu ha-kanunim. And what is he commanding us to do? L'shanot ha-minhag? Change the custom. Lo ashkechinen bein. We would not pay any attention to him. Ki barov dvarav ein halacha kamoto. So notice what the Marshal is saying. Even if I view the Zohar as the sheet of Shem Baruch Hai, why should it win? Right? Very often in Shas, Vishnu Mordechai loses. So I don't think it's really have much impact on the halachic system, right? If we, till now, we have been, or Ashkenazim have been wearing tefillin, they should not stop simply because the Zohar is against it. Now, I admit you might think that's not so different from the Radvaz, but I think if you read the passages carefully, it seems to me the Radvaz is much more open to Kabbalah and playing a role than the Marshal. The Radvaz is saying, when we have a standoff, indeed Kabbalah decides. And the Marshal is very much playing down the ability of Kabbalah to influence halacha. So I just think, guys, I want to raise this as a larger question for us to think about over the year. I think it's quite interesting how we should think about our Jewish thought, our Jewish studies. Like, should every field integrate, or is it a mistake to integrate all the fields? Like, maybe halacha has its own logic and rule book, and to bring in Kabbalah, or for the sake of arguing philosophy, to influence that, maybe that's a mistake, as the Marshal would have it. Or maybe, no, nothing doing. We're going to lead this integrated Jewish life. And in the integrated Jewish life, everything flows into each other. And maybe even Kabbalistic ideas could influence halachic practice. Okay, leave.
Is there a Rabbah's psak where he says, like, yeah, if you really understand the Zohar, then you like, it seems to like this, the Zohar says it, so we're going to go against it. It's kind of like...
You're talking about the Marshal. Marshal or the Radbaz? Which one?
No, I'm talking about the Radbaz. He said that we should go according to the Zohar.
Yes, what's your question?
Is that sort of just like, I didn't really read the whole thing, but like, it sort of seems like it's like a cop-out. It's like, you can't figure out like how lucky principles are just because...
But I understand, why is it a cop-out? I'm relying on all the resources I've got to try to arrive at a conclusion. It's only a cop-out if I posit that the Zohar shouldn't be relevant, right? Is that fair? Who else had a comment? Yeah, no?
I don't think the Marshal here is saying you should separate the Zohar from all the law. He's just saying, rather he's like integrating it. He's like, we shouldn't put the Zohar up on a pedestal. Just like Rashbi sometimes gets rejected in the actual Gemara.
Okay, interesting. But I think maybe we're not really disagreeing. I still think he's kind of reading the Zohar into kind of the halachic rubric. Yeah. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yeah.
Okay. Simcha, what's bothering you? Guys, my favorite part of Shia when Simcha gets upset. It always means like a good question is coming. Okay, in fact, if he looks happy, then it's not a good Shia. Okay.
We're seeing these things as something is whether or not you can put it on. So far, the teachings are seemingly that it's either Musaf or Isra Malacha, which both
you... okay, so maybe I wasn't so clear about it, guys. I want to argue that Musaf and Mitzvah kind of clearly lead you somewhere, but Isra Malacha is more of a question. Because even if you say Isra Malacha, guys, give me two possible arguments. Even if I say Isra Malacha is the Ode, give me two possible arguments why Chol HaMoed would not qualify. Even if I say Isra Malacha is the Ode, Josh Shapiro. Maybe it's only Nisra Drabbanan. Okay, so I didn't, simply I ran a little bit out of time. If you want to see someone who argues vociferously that it's Drabbanan, look at Tosos 8. Okay? Look, well, aren't we forced sometimes to say that even though they're a drasha, it's an asmachta? Sometimes we're forced by other factors. It's not unheard of in Shas, right?
I mean, do they do it in Shas or do we show
them? Okay, so you know what? It's a great question. I feel like I can't deal with it at 12:58. Okay, so some sure clay this year when I'm not wasting time about the four distractions, we'll sneak in asmachas. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really understand that it's to each person holding their position. It's not selfish. They think that they have the right to love them. Therefore, they're not like...
Right, okay, that's a fair point. What if... You're right. Maybe Tosfos knew what they should do, and Rashba knew what he should do. But let's say I'm a leader person, and I'm confronted by Tosfos and Rashba, whatever the case may be. Right, so I might be in a matzav of safek. But you're right. It's a good point that machloket is not necessarily a safek for the people involved. Okay, Nadav, last comment into the review. Okay, so you're asking a very interesting question. I just can't deal with it right now. Saying, when do leniencies reflect something deeper about the Chag? When do they not? That's basically what you're saying, right? Okay, great question, but not for 12:59. Sorry, Josh. Let me just do a 1 minute review, guys. You guys were excellent today, as usual. Okay, here we go. Okay, number one. Okay, why do we not take Kaptun on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Because they're an oat. Okay, we have the Nita Esher question. Why should the oat of Shabbos not defeat the oat of Tefillin? Okay, what were the two answers we saw? Why does Shabbos beat Tefillin? He's going to oat and breathe, or because? Go with the punishments. Great. Now that it beats it, we want to know, does Chol HaMoed have oat quality? What four theories did we have within the halacha rubric that makes Yom Tov an oat? Isra Malacha, or Karban Musaf, or the Mitzvah Ayom, or Teruah, or the status of the Sambayon River, pretty wacky shita. Okay, those are the four shitot. But again, the real debate in terms of Simcha's point would be Isra Malacha. If it's Isra Malacha, does Chol HaMoed qualify or not? Maybe it doesn't qualify because it's the Rabbanan. By the way, even if it's the Raita, you could say it doesn't qualify. Why might it not qualify even if it's the Raita? Because it has all these Heterim. Maybe it has so many Heterim, guess what? After a certain point, you have so many Heterim, you don't really have much of an Isra Malacha. So you could argue that Chol HaMoed fails the Isra Malacha test. Then we saw that things got interesting when the Zohar was adamantly against Tefillin and Chol HaMoed. And it's not an accident that Sfaradim and Hasidim don't put it on, because they are more influenced by the Zohar. The Radva says, if already we're stuck, okay, let the Zohar win. Why shouldn't the Zohar be the decisive force when we're stuck? Again, the phrase Spartan is not what I'm feeling. Where the Marshal was much more, much less enthusiastic about bringing Kabbalistic reasoning in to Psak. All right, guys, if you have questions, you can come over to me. Have a great Shabbos. Guys, if all these Zalman people come over, we'll do a Zalman selfie.
I'm sorry. I didn't even hear you.
I said